Hello, and welcome to this edition of our podcast, where we look at an amusing and interesting account of what it was like to visit the small fishing village of Poulton 200 years ago. It's from the series of Morecambeologies written by Peter Wade, Morecambeology 340, Homes from Home, A Bed for the Night by Peter Wade. Over 200 years ago, the traveller and writer Richard Ayton undertook a journey around his native land, producing an account of his travels as A Voyage Round Great Britain, with illustrations by W. Daniel. Ayton undertook his journey in 1813, and his account appearing the following year. Along the way, he left the well-beaten route through Lancaster, the main north-south route, to wander westwards to the village of Poulton. Here he went in search of his bed for the night. Leaving the valley, I proceeded for 3 or 4 miles along a flat, uninteresting shore, and stopped at Poulton, a large village where, according to a pre-arranged plan, I was resolved to sleep. I applied for a bed at the first public house I came to, but was peremptorily informed that I could neither have one nor a part of one, there already being a company of 60 people in the house to be accommodated for the night. I had no reason to disbelieve this account, for the noise from within would have done no discredit to 600 mouths. Unfortunately for me, this was the first day of a spring tide, and the crowd collected in the village were manufacturers from the inland towns come for the benefit of the physic of the sea. There was another public house in the place, where I learned that I might have a bed, a piece of news which gave me as much surprise as satisfaction, for there were already men enough in and about the house to people the entire village. 6 cartloads had arrived in the course of the day, and the carts were now lying on their shafts before the house, in humble imitation of the coaches and chaises and gigs which we stop in the way before more splendid establishments of this description. In the style and arrangements within doors, there was a general resemblance of the modes of genteeler boarding houses, with some variations that were not a little entertaining to me. On entering the parlour of the visitors, which was the kitchen of the family, I found a long table laid out for a public supper, around which there was already collected a considerable party of men, each taking his preliminary pint and pipe. With the fumes of the tobacco there mingled the fragrance of a large pan of beef steaks and onions, with another of eggs and bacon, which were to compose the repast of the invalids. The rooms above stairs were alive with company, but, on a summons to supper, all flocked together, forming a party of about 40 people. There was a large proportion of women among them, many of whom were so gaily attired that I thought they looked quite out of place in such an atmosphere, though to tell the truth, they did not seem to be at all discontented with their circumstances. One or two, indeed, appeared disposed to spoil the common conviviality of the meeting by some affected airs of delicacy and fastidiousness, but they were met with no success, and were speedily daunted by the honest and heedless vulgarity of the majority. During supper, no one had evidently any thought but of his plate, but when all that was dressed was eaten, and the pipes were filled, and the ale had made a circuit or two round the table, there burst forth a general uproar of talk and laughter, which became still more animated as the ale continued its revolutions, till a huge fellow, fierce and foaming, rose up, and after thumping the table with a quart pot, till no other sound was to be heard in the room, demanded a song. A song was sung, and again every tongue broke loose, till gentleman with the quart pot again interfered, and silenced all clamour but his own. And still the owl performed its rounds, till order was entirely confounded, and all was talking and singing, and all together. The entertainment was novel to me at least, and upon the whole, I was really inclined to think it more amusing than the ponderous decorum of higher company in higher places, with the formal dullness of the tiresome officiousness of Mr. President and Mr. Vice. The amusements of the evening terminated with the dance, but at the time this was called for, the ale had been at least once round too much, and though every man in the company could rise in his chair, yet no one had any control over his motions, nor could stand still, or move as he wished himself or as others directed. The ladies were merely a little louder and merrier than usual, and were still able to jump about with the spirit and precision had they not been incessantly thrown into the confusion by the blunders of their lawless partners, who, in spite of every effort employed to reclaim them and keep them to the figure, threatened at every step to plunge headlong into the fire or out of the window. There was no music, save the general roar of the room, some irregular scraping of feet and clattering of quart pots, and a drowsy, carpulous muttering meant for a tune from some sick and sleepy guests who still kept their chairs at the table. Time and exercise might eventually have given more sobriety and regularity to the dance, but unfortunately there was still more ale in the cellar, and the general complaint was still of being thirsty. This incorrigible symptom leaving me nothing to hope, I did not wait to witness the final demise of the company, but retired to my bed. And now my tribulations began. The landlady, a neat, tidy-looking woman, whom I should not have suspected of such atrocities, conducted me upstairs and opened a door, held a candle immediately under my nose to guide me safely through several narrow passages, with room only for the legs sideways, made by four beds, which formed a blockade before the one intended for myself. Four people, she told me in cold blood, were to sleep in each of the four beds, but I was to have a single partner, and there, sure enough, before my eyes, soundly sleeping and loudly snoring, lay my destined companion, who had retired from the riot below, an early victim of ale and tobacco. My conductress, mistaking my silence for contentment, had nearly escaped from the room before I could find voice to arrest her steps and unburden my heart. My remonstrances, it may be imagined, did not want emphasis, but she listened to them without any kind of emotion, thought that my scruples were unreasonable, observed that we were all Christians and flesh and blood alike, and finally forced me to compliance, as she supposed, by declaring that if I did not sleep in the bed that was prepared for me, there was no other for me in the house. There is indeed, she said, a chaff bed in the hole at the top of the house, but I should scarcely think of offering that to a gentleman. Now this was a straw held out to a drowning man, and I eagerly seized hold of it. The chamber I found was very literally described, but I had to rejoice that it would not hold more than one, and crept into my bed with the further satisfaction of knowing that I was removed as far as possible from the noise and smoke below. On coming out of my hole at 7 o'clock in the morning, matters appeared to be in much the same state as I had left them the preceding night, the company having again betaken themselves to pipes and ale, with appetites sharpened by bathing and copious draughts of salt water. They were very lively under their trails, and seemed to be beginning the day with a kind of ease and contentment in their looks and manner, as if there was not the least doubt among them that they were going on pleasantly and prosperously. For my own part, I was almost exhausted, merely as a spectator of their revels, and made my escape from them into the open air with singular satisfaction. It would have been by no means safe to have manifested any aristocratic airs in their presence, for whatever opinion another might entertain of them and their habits, they were clearly quite satisfied with themselves, and not at all disposed to regard anyone as more than an equal. These men were removed a little out of their ordinary track, and elevated above themselves by holiday feelings, and as much ale as they could drink. But I have observed that in the manners and deportment of the people of the lower orders in Lancashire, there is at all times something peculiar, and very far from prepossessing. A stranger would unquestionably pronounce them to be rude, coarse, and insolent, though I have heard it said in their defence that this external roughness is only a kind of way that they have, and that on a more familiar acquaintance with them, if it be not found to wear away, it cannot be traced to any ill disposition. They have certainly less of that common politeness, that natural courtesy, which forms one of the distinctions between men and bears, than any men that ever fell under my observation. their manners to strangers, whether their equals or their betters, are of the same rude, untempered kind that they indulge in among themselves. They have no best and second best forms of behaviour for particular occasions and particular company, but appear invariably, whatever be the season, under the same rough and everyday guise. But with this want of any degree of polish, they're remarkably quick and intelligent, and indeed their rudeness is quite distinct in character from that gross boorishness and rusticity which we may notice among the inhabitants of less populous countries, and which are the results of mere ignorance and inexperience. They are blunt and abrupt in their manners, but obviously, rather than self-complacency and a high opinion of their own importance, than with any want of familiarity with the formalities of social life. They earn a great deal of money, which tends also to make them saucy and arrogant, and puts them above the necessity of attending to the suaviter in modo, the amenity of manner, and bent back of the man of the world. In Cornwall and Devon, and all parts of Wakes, through which I have travelled, I found that a shilling would always produce me a service and a bow with it. But whatever it might purchase in Lancashire, it certainly would not bribe to avidity. The people here are fully aware of the importance of their labour, and take their reward as a matter of simple right, looking upon any expression of thanks as an unworthy sign of inferiority and dependence. Peter Wade's Morecambeologies are an interesting insight into many aspects of the area's past and present, and now number nearly 350 episodes. They can be viewed on Morecambe Heritage Centre's Facebook page, and are also serialised weekly in Lancaster Civic Vision's blog and news items at www.lancastercivicsociety.uk/blog-and-news.